Welcome to the show. I'm Johnny. I'm your host. Thank you for listening. I hope you're doing well out there. I'm doing very well. I had a great weekend. I went to Houston and played a show with Skyrocket on Friday. And then Saturday in the afternoon, I went and met up with some friends of mine that I have not seen in a long time. Probably like since my mom's funeral, but I've known them since I was 3 months old. And there's three sisters, Dawn, Kimmer, and Jackie. And I went to lunch with Kimmer and Dawn, and we had a blast. It was great. It was like one of those long 3 hour catching up lunches. I laughed. I really, really had a good time hanging out with them. I'm glad that we reconnected. We're back on. I don't know if that ever happens to you, but it's fun. You know, I'm friends with a lot of people that I've been friends with for a long time, so it's nice to add to the thing. They're kind of like family. So anyway, so then Saturday night, I played in Houston. I did a solo show. Oh, solo acoustic show. I haven't played there in like over a year. And so there I did it. And it was great. I played with Amy Bobrook. There was a great crowd. They were all super into it. They sang along. This place, Anderson Fair, is fantastic. I had a blast playing there. And it's a great listening room. And I can't believe I've never been. It's been open since like the early 70s or something. It's great history. You know, Townes Van Zandt, Lyle Lovett, guys like that. So I did that. And if you're in Austin, I am doing that again this week here, Saturday, February 9th at Strange Brew. I'm opening for Tony Scalzo from Fastball, and I'll be doing a set there. I think it's probably maybe around 9 or something. Maybe, I think. I need to find out the times, and I'll let you know maybe in the next episode. So when I got home yesterday, I watched this new documentary called Sound City by Dave Grohl from Foo Fighters and Nirvana. Amazing documentary. It's about a studio had this amazing board, this Neve board, and when the studio closed down, he bought it and brought it back to his place, and he tells a story of the board, story of the studio, story of the music, story of the bands. Unbelievable. Great story. So I highly recommend it to everyone. Do that, watch that, and then come out Saturday, February 9th, and watch Tony Scalzo and me if you're in Austin.
How did I get here?
Lying in the sunshine. My guest today is an amazing singer-songwriter. I've known her for years and years and years. Her husband was recently on the show, Elias Haslinger. Her name is Amy Achley. I first met her, she was in a band called Fabu with a guy named Dave and a girl named Pam. And then they started a band called Hush. And then Amy came in and sang on some stuff of mine. And then she moved to New York. I saw her and Elias once at Thanksgiving when I was up there. We talk about it. And then now she's back in Austin. She's been making records. She's recording a new record, about to start recording a new record, I think. Anyway, I was glad that she was able to come by, catch up. We talked about music, her life. She's a mom now. And just kind of like her journey and how she's made this work. And I really enjoyed it. I hope that you do too. And I guess here we go. This is my friend, Amy Achley.
Strawberry smile. She's standing there behind me. Shine your diamond eyes. I'll scatter in the starlight.
I realized that I've been seeing you play for over 20 years, but I don't think I've seen you play in over 10. Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
I did see you a lot during the 90s.
Yeah, we were kind of running buddies, our bands,
yeah,
back then. That was a fun time. Those were fun times in Austin, in the scene here.
Yeah. And so you went to New York and you came back, and now you're doing, you're making a record?
I'm back in the studio, and we're tracking right now. And the last record I released, which was the track you just played, uh-huh, was in 2009. And we just started tracking for fun, and now I think it's turning into a record. So,
well, that's good.
I know. I'm excited.
What? When did you put that last album up, Pretty Muse?
In 2009.
Mm-hmm. And what was it? Was there a whole... There's other players on it. Did you do it? How did you do it? That's the question I'm trying.
Okay. Yes, I know, because there's so many ways to do it. But very lo-fi, we did it. It's produced by Danny Stapleton, who's my guitar player. And he's got, a home studio. And we tracked in his home. And we went back and redid the piano on a grand piano in a different studio.
Right.
We laid it down the piano tracks originally on my keyboard, my Kurzweil, but
right.
Then we went back and got real piano, and it just, you know, made it sparkle. It
makes all the difference, doesn't it?
Yeah.
There's no sample in the world that you plug in straight that doesn't sound as good as just even a kind of a crappy microphone, mm-hmm, on a piano. Yeah. I know, so once I got this, I just can't bring myself to do recording without a real piano.
Yeah,
I
know.
It just seems really weird.
It does, and I think it sounds weird. You listen back, and you're like, no, there's something. There's like a soul missing, or a life.
Yeah,
a life light or something.
And there's a decay of a sample that you start to hear that it's not real.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it gets me, because these things will go on forever.
Yeah, yeah, they're great. And on this record, we may end up. It's kind of cool because right now I'm babysitting a baby grand piano, baby grand Steinway, 1923, that's in mint condition.
So you have it at your house?
I do.
It's awesome.
Some friends of ours, it's a family heirloom, and their mother was in New York, and she was downsizing, and she said, all right, it's either you take the piano or I'm getting rid of it. And so they called and said, can you have this in your living room? And I was like, I don't know, it's going to take a lot of space. And we got it in there, and I was like, it took me about 2 hours to get used to it. And I was like, oh, yeah.
Oh,
forget the space. This is amazing.
Yeah, once you're used to it, too, what's going to happen if they... Well, maybe they won't ever ask for it
back. I don't know.
You should take a lot of pictures of yourself and put it on social media, just really happy at that piano. And just, like, and write things on it that say, like, if I didn't have this piano, I would crumble.
Yeah, and I would.
And then maybe they would say that. They'd be like, hey, Amy, you guys can have the piano.
I hope so.
So do you kids, you have two daughters?
I have two daughters,
yeah,
two baby girls.
Your fabulous husband, Elias, was on here a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
I love that dude. And I'm so happy that you guys are such, so nice people, such nice, good people.
Thank you.
I got a couple of comments. Actually, even just yesterday, someone had just listened to the Elias one, and they wrote me on Twitter saying what an amazing guy he was.
He's a good one.
Yeah, he is a good one. So do your kids play?
They do. Yeah? They do. And they both play piano. And, you know, we think they're really musical, we hope. You know, we certainly don't want to push, but, you know, we just tell them, if you practice piano 8 hours a day, then you can do whatever you want. So that's kind of the going mantra in our house. But actually, they really are into it. And we let them just kind of go with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you have a piano in your house growing up?
I did. Yeah. I started piano when I was 3.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. I didn't know that.
I played a bunch of instruments. I played piano.
Were your parents musicians?
They were not, but my family, like their brothers and sisters, my aunts and uncles and grandparents, there was just music always. But my parents never did.
No.
So.
How many siblings do you have?
One sister. Yeah.
She live here?
She's in Houston.
That's where your family is.
I'm from Houston. Yeah. She's still there.
So you did the piano. Were you going to be a musician? Did you want to grow up?
I always wanted to be a musician. Always? That's all I ever wanted to do. That my parents used to ask me all the time, what do you want to do when you grow up? What are you going to do? I'm going to be a famous singer, mommy, you know, when I could first start talking. And, you know, dad, one of the things he did for me, I guess I was like 4 or 5, when, you know, they realized I was pretty serious about this. He built me this little stage And he covered it in carpet. And I would go around to the neighbors and pass out tickets because I gave matinee performances every weekend. And so I would perform on this stage. And Dad actually made me a pair of platform shoes out of 2x4s. And I was looking pretty fabulous. So,
do you have any pictures of that?
I don't. You know, we don't have photographs like we do now of that those times. You know, everything is now really captured.
Yeah, it's true.
But I it's funny because last time I went home, I was kind of struggling to find some pictures to show my kids. This is what I look like when I was your age, you know. Right. And there's just a couple, you know.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is that's a different thing. Is your sister older or younger?
She's older. 3 years older, yeah.
All right. When did you first perform outside of when you were 4 or 5 outside? When did you start, like in high school?
I was in church choir when I was 3 and, I started just trying to do as much music as I could. And I guess I went to music magnet school in, elementary and I auditioned for that. And then I went to music magnet school for middle school. And then went to the high school I was into in Houston, Westbury High School, which had an incredible sort of nationally acclaimed choir.
Oh, wow. And you didn't go to HSPBA? My
dream was to always go to Westbury and be in the leading roles in their musicals because they were incredible. I mean, I learned so much from this woman, Virginia Smith. I just learned, like, I learned how to book a band. We the Madrigal Top Singing Group, we worked... and made money so that we could purchase our rent, our costumes for the musicals every year. And the set designs and music and the costumes were just like really elaborate and just gorgeous.
That's awesome. What did you like go do it at like the Galleria or something?
We did all those kind of malls and things like that. And, you know, lots of corporate holiday things we did. We'd perform in Galveston on the Strand and all kinds of things like that. But I really wanted to go there. And what was neat is I was able to take private lessons from the vocal coach at PVA. So I kind of had, and that was during high school years. So I had kind of the best of both worlds.
Yeah. So were you in any shows? Were you in any?
I was.
What were you in?
My senior year, I was Annie in Annie Get Your Gun.
Wow.
And then junior year, I was Hope Harcourt in HMS Pinafore. But I never really went the route of the musical theater.
No.
You know, that was just kind of a vehicle of the time that I was.
Did you at that point, like, we didn't have American Idol or The Voice or anything then.
Right.
But we had Star Search, right? Because this would have been in the 80s.
Yeah.
When you were in high school.
Yeah.
Was that?
I never really thought about doing Star Search. I never really did. But I did have some connections in New York and... I had written out this piece and arranged it with like 4-part harmony, like kind of a contemporary piece with voices. And I took that with me when I went to New York because my friend was a musician there. He was like a church choral master of one of the big churches in New York. So he hooked me up with this guy who was a director in Broadway. And I auditioned for him and, you know, played him my piece and all that. But I wasn't ready, you know. But he was really good and he gave me a lot of ideas and sort of was a mentor to me just sort of in that short time, the brief meeting that we had, and really helped me kind of understand where I needed to go and what I needed to do. And I really needed to get out of actually the musical theater space and really hone in because I was writing songs really early on. And he was like, that's where you need to be. That's you being you. That's your honest presentation.
Right.
You know, so you need to develop that.
At that point, who were your, who did you look up to?
Like musician-wise?
Yeah. Like, were there any women that you were like, okay, this is a...
Well, you know what? There was a lot of... in my house, there was a ton of music. And I think, you know, I really listened to the things that had a lot of harmonies. Like, my mom's favorite record was the Rumors record.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Fleetwood Mac. And that just was sort of ingrained in me. And I just... Stevie Nicks was huge for me.
Right. And the choir gave you the tools to figure out the different... harmonies.
Exactly, yeah. Right. Part ranging. When I was in high school, I took like a music theory class, so I learned a lot about the theory part of it.
Right.
You know, and that comes along too with piano and all that, the classical stuff training.
So then what did you, what was your denomination in the, What kind of tricks did you go to?
Presbyterian church, you know, just very...
Very laid back?
Very laid back.
Not a lot of guilt on you?
Well, no, I'm not going to say that. No, I think I've got a lot of, you know, besides the fact of that religious, preference, I've got a lot of Catholic guilt and Jewish guilt in me too, I think.
Without even...
Just without even, right. Yeah, but I'm working on that.
That's good. What is the Presbyterian? What's the foundation of there? What's the difference? I grew up Catholic, so what's the difference?
It's very much like the predestined thing. Like, it's like, and that kind of helps you when you're a dreamer, because you're like, I'm destined to be a singer, mm-hmm. because it's my fate. It's my fate. It's right. already planned out for me. It's in my heart. I've got this like really incredible calling. So I know that's right for me. So
it's a really good feeling, instead of like going to church and like, I know I've done something wrong and something bad's going to happen.
You don't,
to me if I
don't get
tell
in a lot
man.
Of trouble. You really don't get in a lot of trouble with the Presbyterians, right. But yeah.
So, okay. Well then that's a good laid back. It wasn't like a big, you know, there's not a lot of rules laid on you, like, hey, don't drink, don't
no.
have fun.
No, not dancing. At all. And none of that. It was just, it was a lot of music.
That's
a
good.
A lot of music.
I noticed there's a lot of churches, a lot that have moved into that sort of thing. I mean, I have a lot of mm-hmm. friends that play on Sundays.
I know.
Make I do too. Good money going mm-hmm. out there. And it's just like rock and roll kind mm-hmm. of, not rock and roll, but like people are positive and like, you know, hey, it's, we're going to have a good time today at church.
Yeah.
No one ever said that.
And it's
Catholic
not.
Church.
Oh, that's true. That's true. But you don't get the incense and stuff like you get in
that's
the Catholic
true.
Church, which I think is really cool.
And you miss the intensity of all the guys, you know, all the, I think that stuff informs you growing up, like the pageantry of that sort of thing, you
yeah.
know, the
yeah.
costumes these dudes wear and like mm-hmm. the incense, there's a smell, there's a look, there's
yeah.
a, yeah.
Yeah.
That's freaky.
I spent some time in Italy. I actually lived in a convent.
Really?
And I did. I was.
When did you do that?
That was in college, and I was studying at Verdi School of Music there, and but that was pretty intense being involved in that, and that's when I really got sort of into the Catholic, you know, traditions and things, and I love sort of the pomp and circumstance, like what you're talking
yeah,
about
yeah.
of that, just that part of it. It's really beautiful.
Yeah, it is, and it's real. It's very grandiose. You get a feeling like there's somebody. You know, these guys definitely have something going on that you don't know about, and they're going to tell you about it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm a little bit closer to something.
So you got out of high school, and you went to where did you go to school?
I came to UT. Okay. That's how I ended up in Austin.
What? Yeah. What? When was that? What year? What was going on?
That was.
You don't have to. You don't have to do anything you don't want to do. Age-wise.
Yeah, it was in the early '90s. Let's do that.
Okay. So then that must have been like, is that, did you meet Pam pretty early on?
I did. Well, I met like her my junior year, and we met in Ensemble 109, which was a really small group that was an a cappella group, singing group, and everybody was at a particular level and had their own thing going on. I mean, every single singer in that group was just kind of blew me away, and there was something to be learned from every person in that group. And so I met Pam, and I loved her. I loved her singing, and I just admired her so. And, you know, then we became like sisters, just, yeah. you know, best friends to this day. So,
you know, I have to say, this is Pam Miller that you're talking to. You went on to play music with her for years after that.
Yes, absolutely.
But before we get into it, I haven't seen her in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I think the last time I saw her, I was trying to talk her into being in this all-girl band that I was starting. That was all girls and me.
Nice.
And I saw her a couple times, and then I didn't see her anymore. But I saw her maybe a month ago.
Oh, cool.
I know it wasn't. I woke up. I was staying in a hotel in Houston. I played. I'd stayed up late. A bad night's sleep. Woke up at like, went to sleep at like 2:30. Woke up at like 5 and couldn't go back to sleep because I had to leave at like 8.
Oh, man.
You know, so I was downstairs, and I was just really grumpy, waiting for my friend Paul to come down so we could leave. And I heard the most familiar voice behind me. And I turned around, and I swear, I'm pretty sure it was her and like a husband and kids.
Yeah.
She's got the same
little
thing.
Twins.
Oh, really?
Twin
definitely,
boys.
Definitely that was her.
Yeah.
I feel bad because what I felt like was like, I'm way too grumpy to see someone I haven't seen in almost 10 years.
Oh, yeah.
And that I care about a lot, and then I'm going to have to exchange numbers, and my dude's going to come down and be like, come on, man, let's go. I'm going to be like, well, I got to, you know what I mean?
I do.
It was too much at the time in the state I was in, but I feel really bad for
Yeah, well, leaving. I'm sure there's another time.
Maybe so. So yeah. Where does she live here?
She does. She lives here, and she's had quite a time of it. She's just a cancer survivor.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And but she's doing great, and everything is, you know, on the up and up. So, and she just, you know, blows me away with how strong she was through going through that.
Wow, I didn't even know that.
Yeah. But she's got two little boys, and I guess they're two now. And, you know, they're just, she's in that stage when you have kids when there's kind of nothing else but that, because it's just, you know, such a whirlwind in there. They need you just every minute.
Yeah.
So, and she's got two of them at the same time.
Wow.
So.
And my last girlfriend was a twin.
Oh, wow.
Identical twin.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I was adamant about this. So do not do any switcheroo stuff to me ever.
And?
That's all I said. No, they never did.
And they never did.
I was real serious about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was just like, but I could tell them apart pretty quickly.
There's usually one or two little things when they're so identical that you can kind of.
How far apart are your kids?
They're 2 years.
So, I mean, that's a lot. I mean, that's very close in age.
Very
I mean.
Close. Yeah. In fact, it's funny that they were just saying this morning, I wish that I was a twin. And I said, well, you almost are. You know, when you get a little older, you'll realize that you're super close in age. And it's so nice. I really wanted to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Oh, do they bicker at all?
Yes, they are bickering so much right now, and they didn't used to do that, but they're in that phase right now where they're just, oh, she's so mean, or you know, she's hitting me, or you know, that kind of thing.
Did you see the movie This Is 40?
I haven't, but somebody just recommended that to me the other day.
Yeah, I bet you and Eli would really get a lot out of that movie.
Yeah,
but there's the guy cast his own daughters in it.
Oh, wow.
And they kind of bicker and stuff. And the movie's just like, he just let them do their thing. He didn't really give them any direction.
Yeah.
He would just film them when they'd start bickering.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And it's really natural. It's very funny.
That is funny. Yeah. I do need to see that.
Makes you realize, like, you know, I mean, parenting is such a, I have such a phobia of it, you mm-hmm. know, because I don't know what kind of parent I would be, like, neglectful like my dad, or would I be just crazy, like smothering,
yeah,
never let them out of my sight, kind of really annoying parent that would eventually like push them away in some
I know
way.
Yeah, I have to be careful because I can kind of get into that personality type.
Do you get I'm sure there's no way, especially being a mom, that's instinctively that's your
I'm so overprotective and excuse me and they are just they're right next to me. I mean, they're like under my wing so much. And speaking of this movie that you're talking about, Eli and I are getting ready to go to Hawaii in a couple of weeks. Oh. For the first time, just the two of us, and my kids are going to stay with my sister. And I'm freaking out because I just don't want to leave them, you know. But I know that it'll be good for them to kind of realize that they can stand on their own without being under mommy's wing.
Yeah.
A little bit.
I bet those first couple of days are going to be really weird. There's actually a great scene where they leave their kids in that movie.
And they check it out.
Yeah. Yeah. You'd laugh. They complain about them and that they just always want stuff and they right. need this stuff. But then at the end of it, it's like, we need to call them because I really miss them.
Yeah.
At the end of the thing. Yeah. I bet it's going to be weird.
It's going to be tough, but it's going to be nice. I probably am not going to know what to do with myself because Eli's playing in a jazz festival. So he's going to be doing actually like a lot of rehearsals. So I'm going to have a lot of downtime.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, I'm going to do a lot of yoga on the beach and I'm going to read. What's that?
Yeah.
I get to read a book. This is great.
Yeah.
And hopefully I'm going to get a guitar while I'm there so I can play some music.
All right. That's, yeah.
Songwriting and things.
A little something to do.
Yeah.
Keep yourself busy. Having a good time and just doing whatever you want is going to be a little foreign at first.
Yeah. At whatever time. I love it.
So you and Pam Miller got together and started playing together after you became buddies?
We became really good friends. We would sing together a lot, and we noticed immediately that we had this sort of vocal click.
Totally.
You know?
Yeah,
and totally. So we sang in the group together a lot at school. And I started a band with this guy named David Hemline, who we worked together at the Moon Dance. And
The place on Congress that was upstairs.
We all worked there together. And so actually we hadn't started our first rehearsal. We were going to work on some tunes. He was going to bring some of his songs and I was going to bring some of my songs. And then we both brought like a cover to the first rehearsal. But the night before the first rehearsal, Pam and I went to Liberty Lunch to hear Twang Twang Shaka Boom, who, you know, David and Chris and Jeff were really good friends, still very good friends of ours.
Yeah.
And we were watching them and just, they just had, you know, something really special. And, we were standing on these boxes because we couldn't see. And I just turned to her and I was like, you know, Pam, I'm going to meet with Dave tomorrow. It's our first rehearsal. You should come. You should come and you should do this with us. She's like, oh, I don't know. But she ended up showing up.
What was her trajectory at the time? Was she like, what did she want to do?
I don't know what she wanted to do. I really don't know. I didn't ever really know clearly from her if she was going to totally go for it with music.
Right.
You know, but she certainly had the natural talent within her. And I think as soon as, you know, we started working and again, that chemistry, the three of us together.
It was amazing.
It was a magical thing. And it was like really evident that first time we got together, we just knew. And we knew that we had, you know, to try to do this. So,
yeah, I remember at that Moon Dance Bar, me and Frenchie Smith, you know, from 16 Deluxe. He worked at Whole Foods and so did I.
Yeah.
And we played there one night. I don't know if that's when I first saw you, but I do remember the first time I saw you guys was at this place on the corner of Trinity and Fifth.
Yeah.
And it had an outside big patio.
Trinity and Fifth.
And you guys were playing. I remember that distinctly.
I don't know what venue that is.
Trinity and Fifth. Uh-huh. It's been a lot of different things.
It sounds like Lavaca Street or something.
Something like that.
Yeah.
I can't remember what
it was.
Well,
we played at Ruta Maya all the time, but that's not over there. You would remember that.
Yeah. But I remember, okay. I remember distinct, I don't know, I think we might have played the show together.
Probably.
Maybe. It was 1991.
Yeah.
Or 92.
Mm-hmm.
92.
Yeah.
Sorry. Anyway. So, and I remember, I mean, how long had you guys been playing? When did you start playing together?
I think in like 1990.
Wow.
Yeah.
So
what happened? Maybe 90. No, it was definitely 1990. I can't remember exactly, but 1990.
So you brought Pam to rehearsal?
Yeah. And it just, this like, you know, magical stuff started happening immediately. And we just got so excited. And so then we just like practiced all the time.
Yeah.
You know, and just started writing music right away. And we had our first gig and it was a party that we played called Fabu. The party was called Fabu.
Uh-huh.
And we didn't have a name. And so we were just the Fabu band.
Uh-huh.
And then quickly after that, it was like maybe 2 months. We still didn't have our name yet. We got, I don't know why, but we got recognized by Vanity Fair magazine and they came down to do a story on South by Southwest. And there was a little bit of buzz going on about Fabu. And so we were like, okay, we've got to either change our name now or live with it forever. And we ended up living with it because it got printed in Vanity Fair magazine. And so we're like, oh, we're stuck. We're stuck with this little silly name.
That's really interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah.
So did anything come out of that? Did you guys?
Well, I don't know if anything necessarily came out of that, but we definitely, there was just a time we got featured, I guess, yes, because we got featured pretty quickly after that in Billboard magazine.
Wow, that's a really big.
Yeah, I mean, we were courted and, you know, like everyone's story, almost signed.
There was a very magnetic quality to you guys, you know? The three of you really had a special thing.
I think we did. I felt it, and
you really
and it
did.
Was what a wonderful experience. It was just really beautiful, and I still love both of those guys so much. So
yeah,
I would work with any one of them at any time.
Where's Dave now? He's in Colorado.
Dave's been around, but he's, I think, in Houston now in the Woodlands, and he's a dad, and he's kind of the stay-at-home dad. His wife has this corporate job that takes them around the country.
Wow.
And but what's neat
that
for him?
That would be great. I wish that guy was my dad. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, no kidding. Don't you? I know. I know. And he's so creative. And he's actually an artist. He's a sculptor and a painter. And he's really put his energy into that area. But I know he still is doing some writing. And he sent me a track recently. And I just fell in love with it. It was so beautiful.
Yeah. You guys were really great. So you guys got courted. What was that like? What, explain to the people that are listening what an early 90s courtship from a record label was like.
Oh gosh. Dinners. Well, yeah, dinners. We went to New York and we played the CMJ Music Conference, and we were up in the office on the 42nd floor of Epic Records, and with the main person, her name is Lee Danae. I don't know if you guys ever met her in your time, but lots of promises.
The other thing, too, is that person probably got fired by everyone's job was only...
You know what? She didn't, because when I went to New York about 10 years later, she was showing up at my shows then. Wow. So, but, she was one of these people that, I don't know what, for whatever reason, she just couldn't pull the trigger, although she was up at the top. So, I really don't know what happened.
So promises like, we're going to get you, this is going to be amazing, you're going
to
be this.
Yeah, we're signing you, and we don't want you to talk to anybody else. I know you're in town, and there's other people that want to talk to you. We don't want you to talk to anyone else. There's going to be a deal on the table, but the deal on the table never showed up. Mm. Yeah, so, but
what do you think it was? What do you think it was that might have stopped?
I really don't know. I think it was very... our sound was a little bit unique. It was different, and maybe it just didn't fall into a particular category.
To me, it was unique, but it felt like at that time there was a lot of stuff coming out that was, in fact, I don't know how to say this. Like, it matched some stuff that was going on.
The AAA format.
Yeah. I mean, it fit
in nicely,
like it fit
there.
Really well.
Yeah, I don't really know. I mean, maybe they never, identified that hit or something. I have no idea.
Right.
You just never know with these things. I mean, I've been through that process so many times that it leaves you just kind of baffled.
Yeah. Did you guys write a lot together, or did you each keep your own thing? I don't remember.
We did. We each would write our own tunes and bring it to the group, and then we would arrange it together.
Okay.
And I did, in the beginning, I think Pam was figuring out, how she wanted to translate her music. So I wrote a lot of stuff that she sang on, and we would write together. Pam and I would really write together more so than with Dave. But really, I think what was magical about that trio was we would come together, and it was the arranging. The song, we would bring a song and then the arranging would come together. And that was what really was Fabu, was that, the harmonies and...
Yeah. So how many records, did you make a record like on your own after the courting?
No. We did, we did a record.
Cassette.
Yeah.
Those cassettes with like the white thing on it.
That was all really home done. We four-tracked it, and we had a ton of those, we distributed in them. I've had people say, I still have your cassette. I'm not sure how they're listening to it, but we had that. And then after that, we did the other record that we put a lot of resources into. And it was really a record that was ready to go. It was really polished. Larry Sire produced it. We recorded it at Bismo Studios. We were, which is Ray Benson's studio.
Right.
And we were actually his first band to record.
Really?
In his studio. Yeah.
So what happened with that once you put out the record, you guys
played
regionally? Because we were all kind of playing regionally then.
Yeah, exactly. We played regionally and, we did some kind of one-off things. We played some things in Los Angeles. We did, some other places too, but we, more regional stuff than anything.
Were you ever like hooked up with anyone that was kind of, it seemed to me like you guys always were playing with more rock people than you should have all the time?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, to me, mm-hmm. as cool as Steamboat was, it probably wasn't the venue that you guys should have been playing at that time. It should have been a venue with bands more catered, but no one really knows.
Could be. I mean, I think Cactus was a good space for us. Rudamaya was incredible, but it didn't last. And then, I think our favorite place was Chicago House.
Yeah.
Do you remember that venue?
Oh, yeah. I just had Kevin Gant.
You did? Came over Friday. Oh, I love him.
I love him, too.
Oh,
amazing.
That's awesome.
You know, there's a documentary about him.
You know what? I think I heard that. I forgot about that, but I heard about that.
It's called Kevin.
Cool.
It's amazing. It's only 45 minutes. My aunt, who I was talking to when you got here, was calling me to tell me that she watched it last night and was totally moved by it.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So that was a great place. I remember we did some stuff there with you guys. And there was even like a TV show. Someone was trying to have a TV show. And
yeah,
you guys and us
bell.
Were on it.
Yeah, that rings a bell.
I remember that day because I think Dave came back to my house with me, but I was like, I gotta mow my lawn. And it was in between the performance and the interview.
Mm-hmm.
And when I left, the lady was like, don't change because you gotta make it seem like you were doing the same thing. And I had a couple hours. But Dave came back with me and hung out with me while I mowed my lawn.
Yay.
And then I went back, yeah. So Chicago House that was a pretty magical place. I got a lot of, you guys played there a lot.
We
you
did.
You guys were part of that thing.
Yeah. That was a very, I think, a great room for us.
Yeah. Tell me about that and how it was different than other places, because in all the scenes, I got a good idea of it with Kevin. I didn't really play there very much. I kind of would go there and see you guys, and whenever Kevin would ask us to do something, we would do it, but I didn't really.
It was, you know, it was an intimate space, an intimate listening room.
Yeah.
You know, and it was not as much about, you know, selling alcohol and all that as it was about the music, and that the performances really, you know, drove that venue. And, you know, they didn't really make a lot of money. Doing it that way,
and
so they
had
a lot of poetry readings, and they would have even people come and do some monologues and things like that acting and things like that. But it just, you know, it was really focused on the music. And although I didn't see this performance, but I understand Jeff Buckley's first gig in Austin was there.
Yeah, I think Kevin opened for him.
Oh man!
But I have a story about that Langer. I was at Steamboat to do something, and Andy Langer was like, "Hey, come with me over to see Tim Buckley's son." I was like, "Who's Tim Buckley?"
Are you serious?
And he was like, "He's this guy. He was a great singer, but he's dead now. But his son apparently is amazing." And I was like, "No," and so I didn't go.
Yeah.
But so you weren't at that show. That was going to be
my
next question.
No, I wasn't. Unfortunately, I caught him at Electric Lounge the next year.
Oh right.
And that was pretty cool because, did you catch that show?
No, I went to the in-store that
day. Oh, I went to in-store too, yeah.
At Tower Records.
Mm-hmm. That was awesome. The mains went out at that show when they were playing. And yeah, and what they ended up doing was just turning the monitors around and just played. And they didn't flinch. I mean, it was like, these guys are just, I mean, such pros. And it just was cooler than ever, you know.
That's awesome.
It was.
Yeah. So then you guys change your name to Hush. What happened? Like, why does it?
Well, actually,
Fab Boo
dissolved. So I think after, you know, we got that close to getting signed, and it kind of can kill a band,
right?
You know,
you don't want to be that band that you want a fresh start.
Yeah, fresh start, and you know, Dave kind of wanted to go do his thing, and Pam and I stayed doing our thing.
Oh. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then that was really our rock phase and the Hush thing. That was us getting to kind of be a little bit more rock, which is, it was fun. It was really fun to do.
Yeah.
But it was a little heavier than Fabu, and it was fun. I mean, the harmonies, and again, it was just, you know, focused on that.
Who was in Hush?
That was a couple of different iterations, but it was, remember Scott Gibson?
Uh-huh.
He was always on bass.
Right.
We had J.J. Johnson on drums and Billy White on guitar.
Yeah.
And then the other iterations were Rob Hooper on drums, Charles Reeser on guitar. And then we ended up, the last version of it was JJ on drums and Aaron Barrera on guitar.
Oh, yeah.
Scott on bass and then me and Pam.
So how was that when you lost? I mean, that dynamic shift is pretty strong when you have a tight trio of songwriters and singers, and when one guy jettisons and you're left to your devices.
Yeah.
Was there any kind of like, you know, I'm not digging for dirt, but was it difficult to sort of like, was like a voice of reason gone? You know what I mean? Like sometimes a person makes the dynamic work. And when you yeah. take one of the people out, then the dynamic's like completely, you know, off the rails.
Wow. You know, I haven't ever really thought of it like that. I just think of it really as a completely different band. I think we had a different vision. You know, Pam really came into her own with her songwriting, and that was really neat to see with that band.
Yeah.
And I think that I really think what happened with Hush was very much us beginning to define ourselves as uh-huh. soloists. And we were, you know, because of the magical thing that happened vocally with us, it you know, was received really well and it felt good.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, we did that for about 2 years, if that. And that just, it was, I think, just sort of the next phase of our music.
And you did a record.
We didn't do a record.
You didn't?
Mm-mm. We did. Maybe I guess we did do a record. We did a record with Billy White and
at their house.
Yeah, I cannot remember this guy's name. Isn't this terrible? There's so many people. What was his name? He was one of the guys who worked with Daniel Lanois. Anyway, I can't remember his name, but it was his house studio, and Billy produced it, but we didn't release it.
Okay.
So it was like a six song deal.
Okay.
So
like an EP.
Yeah. And you probably got a burned version from one of us.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because we were passing them around. Yeah. But and I think we might have even sold them at shows. But we just, I think Pam and I had really, sort of gotten gun shy from the Fabu record because we spent a lot of money on that, you know. So we were like, we're going to do this really lo-fi.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It's hard. It's different, like budgets and all that stuff. Like, you really, now that it's obviously on, everyone has their own thing on their own plate and they got to take care of their own business. Mm-hmm. That's, I guess, why big studios close and little places like this become more popular, you know, because everything becomes more affordable. So what did you do after? Then you guys just kind of went your own ways. You were still here, though.
We did. I was here. And actually, Pam moved to New York
right.
at that time. And Dave, you know, Dave kind of disappeared, and he ended up marrying his high school sweetheart.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, and he kind of got into just doing the physical art, the sculpture and painting. And I did my solo career here in Austin.
Yes, and you came and sang on a thing, on a song of mine, I remember at one point when I was in Gowdy.
Mm-hmm.
At the mic. I just remember having a conversation with you on the couch.
At Congress House?
No,
where was it?
At that weird basement studio at Hamsteen that Mike McCarthy worked out of.
Oh, right. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's, man, thanks for reminding me of that. I mean, there's so much that, you know, you just forget.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was awesome.
So then you went on just, what were you doing? You were playing shows
and recording? I was playing and recording just my solo thing. I released my first solo record. And that band was a really strong band. It was... again, J.J. Johnson playing, George Reef on bass, and a couple of different guitar players, Ron Welch and David Polkingham, and also Shane Madden, who was Govinda, and that's kind of was the beginning of us working together, and I've worked with Shane on and off, more or less on his stuff, throughout the years to this day.
Oh, wow, that's cool.
Yeah, I even work with his mom, who's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's her name?
Jan Bozarth.
Jan Bozarth. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love her.
She's got a really cool project called the Fairy Godmother Academy that's for tween girls.
Uh-huh.
And it's been so fun. I've gotten to be sort of the female singer of that project.
That's awesome.
I love it. And I'm performing with them in March, and my daughters get to be the fairies.
Oh, that's awesome.
I know. They can't wait. So it's going to be fun.
Yeah, I have fun. Those... Shane and Jan are the first people that ever paid me to come sing on stuff.
Don't you love that?
Well, yeah. Maybe not the first, because I did these weird... Remember those... There was a thing in the Galleria on the bottom level where you could record a song?
I did those in high school big time, yeah.
I sang a couple of those. Those were my first paying ones.
Oh, you were like the demo guy?
Uh-huh.
Good for you.
I did... I was like the lead vocal that you'd hear before you sang.
Neat. So yeah. I heard you while I was... Like,
if you did Bobby Brown, My Prerogative.
No, but I was doing Whitney Houston stuff. So I was along the same lines. Oh my God.
I did. I remember I had to learn that. Too hard to handle, too cold to hold. You call the Ghostbusters and the in control.
That's good. That's
terrible. Anyway, so that's what I remember. That's those hilarious. Guys always like hired you to do stuff. It wasn't
exactly.
like my friends that would be like, dude, come on, just come over and sing. It's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. It's a fine line, too, when you're working with friends, because we're kind of like family friends now after all these years. Yeah. But they always pay me. And
yeah, they're very good about
that. I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a great gig.
Yeah. So you've done stuff with them. And then what made you guys move to New York?
Well, I sort of was getting the feeling myself that I was sort of, and I think Eli, too, I was sort of plateauing out here in Austin. I felt like, you know, I love this scene, but what else can I do? And I couldn't move it forward. And so we went to visit Pam, actually, in New York. It was in November. And Eli had been there before we got married. He went to Manhattan School of Music. And he had always been saying, we need to move to New York. And I was like, no, I'm not interested in New York. Maybe Los Angeles, but not New York. But we went in November, and I just fell in love immediately. And I played a show there, and it was just received really well. And I was like, man, this is it. And we moved up there like a month later. We like sold everything and, you know, took our dog and two kitties and just did it. And it was crazy because when we arrived in New York, we had like, I mean, really zero money to our name. I mean, I'm talking like probably $100 maybe, and that's not zero, but I mean, really, it was kind of scary. So,
that's not zero, but in New York, that's like,
it's not going to last long. We didn't have jobs. So we were kind of flipping out. And so we went to get temporary jobs because we heard you could do that. And so we took our, you know, very best like corporate looking type things and went and took these typing tests and, you know, computer skills tests and tried to get placed. And we both ended up actually getting placed right away, which was a godsend.
Yeah.
You know, I ended up working for my first 2 months there on Wall Street at one of the biggest like trading firms.
Wow.
Yeah. And Eli ended up working. He got into books, like book editing, like interiors. And then I wanted to work at MTV Networks. I was like, I'm going to go make this happen. And so I kind of focused on that goal, and I ended up getting a job there. Yeah.
Didn't you work at VH1 or something?
I did. I worked at VH1 Save the Music.
Oh, that's awesome.
It was amazing.
That's a great thing to work for.
It was fantastic.
Why did you want to work for MTV Networks?
I just felt like anything I could do to get closer to my goal.
Right.
And I knew that that was going to be one way of doing it, and I had a connection over there. So I tried everything. So
did you at that point, like, what, that was the time of that was the MTV era of TRL?
Yeah.
Was the big.
Exactly.
So you worked down there?
I did. I didn't work on TRL, but I worked.
No, but in that.
Yeah.
Is that their building?
21st floor. Yeah. Yep. At VH1. And I worked, you know, helping Save the Music, which was a cool thing. I found that I had this sort of desire to kind of get involved in the community and help the world. And I was able to.
You're still doing that now?
I'm still doing that now. I knew that after doing that, I had to continue with that. So.
That's great. What all did you do at Save the Music? And what all, like, they give instruments to schools?
They do. They go into low-income areas, and they basically restore music education programs. So you have to, you know, you meet with the school districts, and you get them to sign on to say, if we install this music program, which is going to get you money, but it's also going to get you instruments, will you agree to at least 5 years of keeping it alive? And so there's a lot of politics involved. And so I helped write some of the kind of marketing pieces to make that happen. And I worked on a lot of the sort of videos.
The commercials and stuff.
Exactly, to sort of sell that in.
Yeah.
But what was the most fun for me was going to what they call the delivery events, where we would go and take the instruments to the kids.
Oh, wow.
And sit down. And I would, you know, I was sort of a talent ambassador for them. Yeah. And so I would get to play and be, you know, Amy from VH1 and get to share music and inspire them with, you know, my story of, you know, following my dreams. And oh man, that was amazing. And
that is amazing.
A lot of these kids have nothing. And for them to get to sit down in front of a piano and just play a little bit, learn a little bit, because you can kind of learn quickly, just a few sounds, and you know, just they would light up. Yeah. You know, so it was neat.
Wow, that's amazing. So what were you doing musically? So you were writing at the time,
or
was it like New York, like living? It takes a lot of time there.
Well,
it takes a lot of your day.
It does. And I tell you what, because I had a really cush situation in Austin, you know, back then in the 90s, you could live on not much.
Yeah.
And I didn't work much, and I played music mostly. And Eli was playing music full time. And so when we got to New York, it was a rude awakening. It was like, hey, you know, we're going to have to work full time to do this music thing. And so that's what I did. I mean, it was just all it was work and music and work and music. I mean, there's a lot of fun to be had in there. Don't get me wrong. New York is a blast.
Oh, yeah.
But I was playing a lot. You know, it was very easy for me to sort of walk in to the scene there and just be a part of it. And that was amazing to me. It was sort of like a gift somehow.
Yeah.
It was just my sound is very, you know, people really get it. And you know, I met a lot of people right away. I met a producer right away. I had management when the first 3 months that I was there, and started showcasing and doing a record immediately. And then after doing that, about 2 years into it, I started making some money doing jingles. I got a jingle agent. And
that's
was
great.
Awesome.
Is there anything anyone would have heard?
I think so, yeah. The biggest thing I did that was like I kept, you know, looking in the mail and there would be a nice little check for a long time was the eBay commercial. It was the one where they did it's called eBay on Broadway. And I had a one-liner that I overdubbed. I was supposed to be like three different sounds, like three different singers. So they chorused me, you know. And it was just like, I saved a bunch on that guitar.
Yeah.
That line. And that was my big one. But I did some stuff. I did Huggies and I did a Huggies commercial and I did a Downy commercial, which was one of the, with the little bear and the woman putting the clothes on the laundry line. And those were national. JCPenney's Christmas thing I did with Joy to the World.
Wow. So
yeah.
How did you end up getting it? Like, did you get a jingle first and then get a jingle agent?
No.
Or someone said, hey...
One of my guitar player who was producing my record at the time was like, you know, your pitch is just fantastic. You need to be doing jingles and I know who you need to meet. And it's this woman, her name is Valerie Morris. And so she set up an audition with me and it was, she was so intimidating. I mean, she scared me to death and everyone warned me, just be careful because she's kind of intense and she'll be really harsh and very honest with you. So I was scared to death. But you just go and sing and she just has you do all kinds of styles that,
in front of her
one-on-one.
I'm so bad at that kind of thing.
It's very intimidating. And especially when, you know, going in there, she can be kind of like the mean teacher kind of vibe. But she liked what she heard and she pulled out some sheet music and I could sight read and she was like, that's what I need. So I got a jingle audition because you audition for jingles. You don't just get one.
Yeah, yeah.
So I got an audition like within a couple of days of meeting with her and it was sight reading some classical music, really high stuff. And so I did it and I nailed it and that house was called Elias Jingle. The jingle house was called Elias.
Yeah.
And...
it's a good luck charm.
I know it was. Yeah. Good luck charm. And so basically, in order for me, it was for New York Lottery. But basically for me to work with them, I needed to be a part of the Screen Actors Guild. And in order to do that, you have to get sponsored, which means the Jingle House has to pay like about $2,000 up front for you. And then you pay like about $1,000 and then you're part of the guild and then you can work and do national jingles. But if you don't have that, that kind of keeps you... sort of limited to only doing sort of regional stuff and people don't really want to work with you because they, you know, they want their stuff to go national.
Right.
So that's kind of how that evolved.
Wow. It's a lot of complications. It's a drag when sometimes that could be a real catch 22. If you don't have the $3,000,
yeah,
but you have the talent and the voice.
Yeah. Yeah. I had to just charge it, you know?
Yeah.
But it paid off, man. It really did.
That's good.
I wish I could still continue doing it. I tried when I moved back to Austin. I did a lot of remote, what are they called? Auditions. Those things. And it's just, you know, it's not the same. People want to be in the room with you. It's really relationship based.
Oh,
you know,
to do up there with the same Jingle House.
The same Jingle House, because my agent was like, let's try it because, you know, you've got a niche thing.
Right.
So we'll try. And we tried. And it just, you know, it's just not the same.
Yeah.
You know, people, like I said, people want to be in the same room with you and just you get an energy from somebody. You know, I mean, there's a ton of wonderful singers. So it's really just, you know, that's a networking thing.
It's a lot of people. I've gone and done some auditions here. They've never really done very well.
I've tried to get back into it here in Austin, and it's a very tight scene.
It is very tight.
And people don't even really want to talk to you. So it's like, well,
yeah.
You know.
One of my very best friends, I mean, he still has a room there and does stuff there, but was like one of the main Tequila guys.
Yeah, Tequila. That's it. They're the Jingle House.
Yeah, it was just kind of like, he would get me auditions all the time to do stuff, but I just didn't cut the mustard.
Oh, man, I can't even imagine that. You're so perfect
I can't,
on that type of thing.
I have a weird voice. Like, and it's not malleable to be normal, you know what I mean?
It's your own sound, so unique.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it didn't help
That's
me.
Fine.
My friend Benjamin did a lot of stuff. You know Benjamin?
I don't know.
He's in Skyrocket. Benjamin Hoskins.
I don't think so, but...
He had that band Bongo Hate in the...
Yeah. I don't know him, but I've heard about him.
Yeah, he's great.
Cool.
He did. He's done a lot of work there. Anyway, so I remember going to see you guys on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I know.
In New York.
Do you I think that's the last time I saw you.
It might be.
And what was going on with you? Because I think you were talking to Epic Records, weren't you, at that time or something?
No, we were signed. We were on tour, and we had a break on Thanksgiving week, and half of our band went home, and me and A&R were like, well, let's just stay here. Let's pretend we live in New York was actually, I believe, the quote from A&R.
Okay.
Dude, let's just stay here. We'll pretend we live in New York. And I was like, okay.
Yeah.
So that's what we did. And I remember at the time you were playing a lot.
Yeah.
And was it Elias playing a lot as well?
He didn't play quite as much. He did a lot of writing. The jazz scene's very different. It's a completely different scene. I mean, he did do some playing and stuff, but it was just a different thing.
It seems like it's a closed scene. I mean, it seems like the guys up there think they're the guys that are the real guys.
You know, that's what I gathered. It wasn't like, you know what New York was for me when I went? The scene was very much like when you and I were, our bands were really playing closely together.
Yeah.
It's like everybody is really open and supportive, trying to help everybody. We would sing together, jump on stage, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
That kind of thing was happening in this particular group in New York. And I just got lucky and got right in with those people. But the jazz scene was very, from what I gathered, very closed off and competitive. You know, and if you sounded great, you were sort of a threat.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, Eli, you know, he definitely, you know, broke through a lot of that. But, you know, his thing was a lot of, you know, composing. I mean, he wrote and wrote and wrote. And he also was touring with Maynard Ferguson a lot while he was up there.
That's a great gig to have.
I think he enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what made you guys move?
Move back?
Uh-huh. Move away from there. Kids.
You know, that was a big factor, the kids. There's a lot of things. Sort of felt like, you know, we were approaching that same place where it's like, okay, this isn't really going anywhere. The jingle work was, that scene was really changing a lot. And the work was becoming far and few between. And... we both kind of felt like, you know, maybe it's time to go home. We either need to like really set roots down here in New York or go back home to Austin. And then my mother got sick with cancer.
Oh, no.
And so I just was like, oh, my gosh. I went to see her and I was like, I can't leave my mom. So I felt very drawn to coming home. And so we came back and we were there about 4.5 years. And it took me, I would say, about 2 years to reacclimate myself because I wasn't really ready to come back to Austin.
How was your mom? Did she?
She's great.
Oh,
it's been a miracle story. It's been a miracle story. She had kidney cancer, and it was stage 4, but there's no chemotherapy or anything for that. They just took out the kidney that it was in and the surrounding cells. And I mean, 7 years later, you know, it's pretty, it's a miracle.
That's
really
great.
Yeah. I'm happy. I'm happy to still have her. And it was good to be here for her during that time. I didn't want to be anywhere else really.
No.
You know?
Yeah. So 2 years, what was going on then?
I just felt a little bit like a fish out of water. You know, I felt like I had a lot of momentum going in New York and just kind of stop that. And then to come back to Austin, it was almost like starting over. The scene changes really quickly here. And it's like, wow, you know, I've got to go back and, you know, try to figure out how to get gigs here in town. And,
right.
You know, I've got to start a new band and all that. And it just, in terms of music, you know, it was great to be back home with the family and, you know, friends. That was great. And then, you know, we had the kids. And when I had the kids, I was like, oh my gosh, I love being in Austin.
Yeah.
Because Austin is like, I think, such the perfect place for an artist to have a family.
Yeah.
You know, because that's, you can have your music and your art, and you can raise your kids in a really fantastic community.
Yeah.
So
you started playing again, and
and
then you put out that record in 2009.
Yeah, I put out the record in 2009.
But you didn't do any records in between coming back in 2009?
I did. I recorded a record called Wish in New York when I was living there. And I recorded it with a guy named Steve Walsh, who was a producer, and his Brooklyn home studio. And we mixed and mastered at the Hit Factory, which was kind of cool.
Wow.
It was exciting.
What was that? What was that like? What place is that?
That was amazing. I just sort of felt like, man, I have arrived, you know, when I was in those rooms. I was just like, everywhere I was looking, it's a gold record, you know, somebody incredible. So it was neat.
There's an interesting feeling when you're in that. You get either two feelings, like one of them is like, okay, this is definitely, I've been in those situations where I've had both of the, like, you get in the room with the gold record, and, oh, this is where Prince recorded his thing, and Van Halen, and you're like, oh, yeah, this is now Johnny. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm in that long list. And then the other ones, the other times you're in there and they're like, yeah, Snoop Dogg is in the room next door.
Right.
And this guy's here. And you're just like, why am I here? Like, I'm like a weirdo.
I know what you mean. You exactly. I mean? I do. There is that too. It's kind of surreal a little bit.
Yeah.
It's funny that you said that, because Jay-Z was like down the hall recording when I was, in Christina Aguilera. That sound was like really the big thing that was going on in New York when I was there too.
Wow.
So... But yeah, I understand what you're saying.
Or did you pass them in the hall or any kind of weird thing?
I didn't meet them, but you know what? When I worked at VH1, I met a lot of celebrities.
Doing the Save the Music?
Save the Music, yeah. And I just, you know, went on a lot of, I would go on these very extravagant retreats with the marketing team, and there was always talent there. So that was really fun.
Did you ever get to sit down and talk to anyone cool?
Yeah. Who? I did. Well, the person, I mean, there's a bunch of different people. David Gray.
That was
pretty cool. He, my desk at the time was a little cubicle that was in the perfect spot. It was right next to VH1 radio and the bathroom. So I saw everybody.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
And quite often they really had the radio. It was a tiny room. I mean, it was a small room. But they had it really soundproofed, you know? And so, but they kept the door a little bit cracked, and I heard this incredible sound. It's a guy on acoustic guitar singing, and he had a backup singer, and it was like blowing me away. And I was like, wait, I know that. It's from the record White Ladder. And I went over there, and it was David Gray, and it was me, and then the vice president of talent. And we were just like listening, just two people, and then the DJ, you know.
Wow.
And I got to hang out with him and talk to him afterward. And he was so cool, and just, you know, keep doing it. You're going to make it, you know, kind of guy.
Yeah.
You know, another person that was really interesting was I met Dave Chappelle.
Oh, wow.
And that was in Puerto Rico, actually. And I ended up playing flag football on the beach with him.
That's
and that
awesome.
Was really fun. Yeah. And he was kind of shy and kind of quiet, but real sweet.
Was that before he disappeared?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was.
Wow.
Yeah, it was. So I don't know what all was going on there, but, you know. He was a lot of fun.
I love that guy. I wish he wouldn't have disappeared. I mean, the thing is like, the people get mad if someone becomes really famous and then kills themselves. And like, why didn't you just drop out? But then they get mad at you when you drop out too. Cause you know, but I guess that's what you got to do as a fan. I miss his humor.
Absolutely. Me too.
Yeah.
Me too.
He's a funny guy. So when you came back, you did, You did Pretty Muse?
I did.
And you've been doing shows every fourth Friday at Flipnotics?
Yes.
You see, I did this without notes.
That's awesome.
I only had four things to remember.
Okay, there you
and
go.
And I remembered them.
Well, thank you.
Four bullet points.
Four bullet points. I like bullet points.
I do too. I don't like a blown out. I felt like I didn't need a bio for you for before you moved to New York.
Yeah.
I knew, basically.
Aren't bios hard when you've been doing it for this long?
I've never written one of my own. Yeah. People have written them for me, and they always seem really stupid.
I bet they seem amazing.
No, they just seem like someone's trying to make you seem like seem a big
fantastic.
Deal.
Fantastic. I know.
This guy's amazing. So, yeah, it always is just kind of like, well, don't show anybody I know this, and we'll
it's
be
so
fine.
Funny. It's great.
Nobody that knows me. So, you're starting to record, and who's your band now? You got Glenn?
I do. Glenn McGregor on the bass, and Seth O'Rell is playing drums with me.
Oh, I like Seth.
Yeah, and Danny Stapleton on guitar.
I think I know Danny. What bands has he been in? Do you know?
Stereo is a Lie. He played in that band, and he's actually an engineer guy. He runs sound at Stubbs.
Yeah.
But he's a brilliant guitar player.
No, we're friends.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. He was in a band when I was in Gowdy. He was in a band that we, that we played with a lot. And I'm drawing a blank on their name. But I just saw Danny a couple weeks ago at Stubbs.
He told me.
Okay, so then it's the same guy. Yeah,
yeah. It was so funny when you emailed me because I was like, okay, I was just thinking of Johnny yesterday, you know, because he was going on and on about how great you guys were, how you killed it.
It's a pretty extravagant experience, that band. It's a. At this point, it's been 11 years, or almost 12 years.
Wow.
So it's a pretty well-oiled machine.
Yeah.
Like
it's
a production. It's almost like a review. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not so much like being in a band as much as being in a traveling stage show.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it is kind of cool.
And it's like
made
you
me
know
a lot
what
better.
To do exactly.
Yeah, and you gotta play outside of your wheelhouse sometimes and learn to play things that after you leave today, I've got to work on a synth riff that's really fast. So luckily there's stuff now where you can slow recordings down without changing the pitch.
Really?
Yeah. And
so
then
you can
just kind of learn it slow and then, you know, speed it up.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything that we should know about? Where do people find you? Is there amyashley.com?
Yeah, I have a website, amyashley.com. And then you can always find me on Facebook.
Facebook.
I recently launched my own band page.
Oh, yeah?
So I'm trying to get likes there.
Yeah, I'll like it.
Okay.
Maybe I already did.
Maybe you did.
I might have already when I was doing my research.
Oh, okay. Well, it's so funny because it's hard to... You've got your sort of, mojo going on your Facebook, and then you want to launch your band page, and it's kind of like the stepchild, you know? And how do you develop that? So...
Yeah, I have, I can't have any more friends on Facebook. Like, I've reached the limit capacity.
Are you serious?
But I only have 200 likes on my music page.
Right.
It's like, who are these people?
That is crazy.
So yeah,
that's amazing, Johnny.
I don't know what translates to anything. Do you find it weird now? I mean, it's a lot. I remember you guys did mailing lists in the time of Fabu.
Yeah.
Like mailing lists. And remember you'd have
postcards.
To go and do the Kinko's, and then it would cost a fortune to mail all that stuff.
Man.
The more fans you got, the more expensive your thing became.
Yeah.
Do you find this easier, or do you find that it's a lot more clouded in?
You know what? I tell you, it's really tough. I'm not really sure how best to handle it. I don't do events anymore on Facebook. I really just post on my page, you know, when I'm playing. And it's not enough. You know, I kind of quit doing the email thing, but I think I'm about to bring that back, you know, cultivate that list again. But I find it hard to do marketing for myself. And, you know, I do, I have a part-time job, and my part-time job is social media person. For Meals on Wheels.
Oh, so you're already there all the time.
I'm there all the time, and I'm great at that. But
right.
When it comes to my stuff, it's just, I don't know why. I just really
like
fall
writing
short.
Your own bio. It's just
exactly.
Weird. It's like,
it is. It's uncomfortable. I would not be on Facebook. Maybe I'm thinking I wouldn't be if it wasn't for my music. Right?
Or this? Yeah. If it was, I wouldn't. It takes. But everybody's there. It's so weird. It's weird when you go walking somewhere and everyone's like doing this, like,
I know.
Or you go out, like I've gone on some dates and someone's like constantly texting the whole time. You're like, dude, are you serious? Like,
yeah.
And then I feel a little old and weird. Like, yeah. I'm like, put the goddamn phone away. You're on a date with me. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no,
yeah, it's
though.
All kind of weird. And you're like, what are you, like, making plans in case this doesn't work out? Yeah. You jump out and you meet someone else somewhere else or something. Right. Like, what a weird, what a weird modern world.
You know? Well, don't you think there's a certain etiquette that everybody should follow? I mean, come on. Dinner, I mean, I'm sorry, but.
Well, yeah.
Put the phone down for dinner anyway. You know,
that's true.
I don't know. It is strange. I wonder where it's headed. It's, you know.
What are your kids out? Do they go on the internet? Do they want iPads? Do they?
Well, they do want iPads. We have an iPad at the house, and the kids sort of started taking it over. So Santa brought them these little sort of kid notepads, and they're fantastic because they really are geared for them. And, you know, you don't have to worry about them coming across something that's not for kids, you know.
Do you worry about that a lot?
I don't, but now that my 6-year-old is really starting to navigate on the computer, I've started thinking we're going to have to figure out how to get, you know, these blocks of, you know, you can block off certain things, and we're going to have to
put parental controls
and put that in place. So,
do they want phones and stuff?
Yeah, they want all that stuff.
Yeah.
We've got an iPod and a little iPod for my 6-year-old that she got for 6th birthday, and my 4-year-old is dying for one, and I'm gonna have to get her one when she turns 5, just because it's a battle who's getting the iPod, you know. Yeah. And it's like, can you imagine having an iPod when you're 5 and 6? They have their songs, you know, and they want that. That's a big
deal.
What do
they listen to?
Well, I have to say, you know, we One really sheltered, we, well, oh. yeah, we sheltered them forever, you know, and it's like they were like listening, you know, their first thing that was downloaded on the iPod was the whole catalog of Ryan Adams, you know,
right.
And I'm walking around singing Carolina and all this stuff.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
amazing. You know, we started with little summer camps and stuff, and even in kindergarten, they start hearing all the other stuff, and so they really do love the top 40, and it kills me because...
Does it? Are you not down?
Some of it I'm really not down with, and, you know, what I don't like is it just seems like a lot of that is just so produced that it's not real, you know, like the vocals are all auto-tuned, and I don't know, the production is really slick, and I can have an appreciation for it, and there's people, like I would say... You know, I think Katy Perry has a fantastic voice, and there's just, you know, hands down, you know.
Did you take them to see the movie?
I didn't.
Okay.
I think they're too little.
Yeah, that's still. What I thought too. But
and
I thought the kids in the audience were kind of too little to be at a Katy Perry show.
Absolutely.
Like, that was part of the thing, like, what's she, like, she's, like, comes out with, like, these cone boobs that squirt out, like, whipped cream and
I
stuff
know.
On people, and I was just like, that's not really, like, a kid's
no.
person.
No, and, I mean, they want to listen to Lady Gaga, and I have to really, like, change the channel. You know, or have to change the station.
Well, where do you... This is a good... I'm sorry, this veers from stuff, but I like
That's
to know
fine.
This kind
yeah.
of stuff as a parent. Where do you stand? Because I heard this song by Kesha.
I do not like
Tonight
Kesha.
We're Gonna Die Young, that song, which is basically like, hey, you might have a boyfriend, but, you know, there's no reason to have any kind of morality because, you know, let's just do it, you know, let's go.
Right.
And when I heard that, I was like...
Yeah,
that is a terrible thing to be saying.
Here it is, because that she's kind of on my list, because I just think her message, she has a lot of power and a lot of kids and teenagers just looking to her. And it's just, I don't think that's the message, man. I just don't. I mean, I really don't. I don't let, when Kesha comes on, even my kids know, we can't listen to Kesha. I change it because I just don't want that ingrained. I don't want them to celebrate dying. There's other time to think about that.
Or just celebrate throwing any kind of being a good person out the window because...
Right. Well, they don't get. They're not getting that yet. Right now, they just hear the lyric "Wanna Die." They can take. They take things out of, you know, context like that. You know, and a lot of the Nicki Minaj stuff. You know, it's you know, just there's not a lot of depth in the lyrical content.
No.
You know, and now I feel old because I remember. I had a really funny thing with my mom. So we had one of those little old record players, you know, the little cardboard that you open up and you play singles on.
Yeah.
And one of my first record singles was Tonight's the Night by Rod Stewart.
Oh, yeah.
Which, you know.
Hey.
I cover that song now because I love it. But anyway, So when the "Spread Your Wings and Let Me Come Inside" came on, my mom bust through the door. "You can't listen to that." And she took the record and broke it in half. And it crushed me, you know. But now I think I understand a little bit. I mean, I had no idea what that meant, you know. I was like 6 or whatever, yeah. 5.
Yeah.
It was just a great sounding song, you know. So, but I, you know, so I try to remember that when I'm like censoring stuff with my kids. But I am going to censor stuff. Yeah. You know,
that's weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think if I had kids, I would totally censor stuff.
Yeah.
But when I was a kid, I was listening to like Kiss, and they had lines in their songs like "Stick your hand in my pocket and grab onto my rocket" and stuff.
I didn't know what that was.
I didn't. I knew what that was.
Did you?
I mean, my God. I mean, I didn't know why anyone would do that.
Okay. Oh, right,
But I understood the act of it. I remember it now. I'm 44 years old. I remember it now because I spent so much time going like, why would someone ask someone to do that? Because I mean, I was like 9. I was why is this man in a mask asking someone to grab his rocket? That's I didn't understand the why of it. Kind of like, why would you want someone to do that? Why would someone do that? Mm-hmm. Why would it be in a song?
Wow, and that really stuck with you, it sounds like. Yeah.
There were a lot of things like that. But, you know, I remember, you know, my cousins listening to Edie Brickell and New Bohemians, you know, that song, Little Miss S, that shooting up dope in the bathroom, making it with punks on the floor. But they were like 4 and like singing along with
it. I know. And it's, you know, it's kind of give and take.
It's a different thing. So is there anything out there that you're like, yeah, I like this, even for yourself?
You know what? I really like the number one song in the country right now, which is, I don't know the name of it. It's the Bruno Mars tune.
Oh, it's a good song.
Man, that's a great tune. Yeah. Man, it makes me feel good. There's another one that I love very much. See, I'm going to be all into the top 40. Rihanna's "Shine Bright Like a Diamond." Have you heard that?
Yeah, I like that song.
She can sing.
I listen to pop radio.
She can sing. I mean, it's hard not to. When you're writing pop songs, you need to, you know, listen to that stuff.
Well, plus there have been times when I've not listened to it.
Yeah.
And I've, like, you're less accepting of things.
Yeah.
Or at least I am, you know, and I find, you know. I mean, I'm not rocking like Gangnam Style in my house, but I don't. I mean, I'm fully aware of what's going on.
Yeah, you need to be.
Yeah.
I think as an artist, for sure.
I feel like there's too much electronic dance music and pop music right now. There's that same doom, doom, doom.
Yeah.
That's like.
It bothers me, yeah.
Yeah, it kind of drives me
nuts. I just want to hear a little acoustic guitar, you know, and some real singing. It bothers me.
But see, when that happens too, like this Phillip Phillips, I don't like that guy. I don't like what he's doing.
Oh, right. Yeah.
But I did see the Lumineers. Mm-hmm. I watched Saturday Night Live online yesterday.
Yeah.
And they were on Saturday Night Live, and they were like a real girl was playing cello, two guys playing guitars, singing.
Yeah. I mean, there's some stuff out there. Yeah. Gautier is great.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't really know how that song made it on top 40, but I'm thrilled.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very different.
Really stood out when it came out like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about, I'm going to ask this question, and I have a few listeners that don't like that I do.
Okay, go ahead.
Jepsen, Call Me Maybe.
Oh, right.
Great song, right?
You know what? When you look at it from songwriting, yeah, it's so catchy. But, I mean, I don't love the song, but you know what? Everybody in my house walks around singing it. You know what I mean?
And that's not a, that's got a green light for the kids.
Not really.
No?
I mean, it's okay. I mean, it's.
I mean, she's giving her number out to people. Left and
yeah,
right.
I do. I mean, you know, I got little girls, you know, and it's I think it's a great song. I mean, when it comes down to that songwriting kind of, you know, looking at making this little hit song, I think that's it, you know.
Yeah, they did a good job with that song.
Yeah.
I sing it a lot.
Yeah.
And, you know, I saw the Go-Go's cover.
Oh, really?
It was really good, yeah.
Neat.
Yeah.
Wow, that would be cool.
Yeah.
Where was that?
It was at the ACL Theater, Moody Theater at the W.
Wow.
Have you been there?
I have. I was just there
recently. With your husband.
Alejandro Escobedo, yeah.
That was a great show, huh?
That was. Were you there?
Nope.
Okay.
I was playing in Houston.
Oh, okay. Cool.
I just had Ricky, their guitar player, on though on Friday.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
He's great.
He is great.
He also plays lap steel. Yeah. Is that the same guy? Oh, my gosh. I just loved him. It was fun. I got to meet him, and I was like, man, you are fantastic.
Yeah.
It's refreshing when you hear that kind of talent.
I had lunch with a guy yesterday that listened to the podcast that I did with him and was like, I'm so glad I listened to it because I always thought that guy was an asshole.
Oh, okay.
He's not.
I didn't get that at all.
No, he's just kind of, he's a little, well, that night I'm sure he was like walking on air because he's such a fan of everyone that he was playing with and couldn't believe he was playing with those people and all that stuff. And he's just kind of a, you know, I don't know how to describe it. I could describe it with a look, but it won't work for the podcast listeners. He's just always like, oh man. Like, that's kind of like his delivery of stuff. Like,
yeah,
I'm going to do this great Alejandro show. While I'm excited I get to do this, I got to learn like 65 songs. You know what I mean? Like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, and I think it's actually kind of humorous.
Right.
Yeah. So that was a good show. Unbelievable.
It was a great show, and it just, you know, it was amazing talent in the room.
Yeah.
And it came together really well. It was great.
Doesn't it give you hope when you see a guy like that really hitting his stride?
Yeah.
It's weird to see someone hitting their stride at 60 something.
Amazing. Yeah. I mean,
it makes me feel good.
Yeah. He's got the longevity. And what I like about Alejandro is that he's just always done, you know, he's done it his way.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, that's to me success, you know?
Yeah. You've done it your way, right?
I've done it my way. And, you know,
happy?
I am happy. And I have to say, you know, it's a constant revisiting what success is. You know what I mean? And then I stop back and I look, I just feel blessed. I have it all. You know, I've got these babies that are everything to me. That's just, that is the ultimate. And then, you know, I get to do music, you know? And then I get to, you know, I'm in a wonderful marriage, happy, you know? We work at it a lot, but it's great. And, you know, I work at Meals on Wheels. I get to help people. So it's a nice life. It really is.
I think that's a good place to stop then. I'm very happy. I agree with you wholeheartedly. You do change your ideas of success. And the fact that you're still actually making music and being able to do it is really the success to me.
It feels, I mean, I'm so glad to see you still doing it too.
And yeah.
I mean, there's no reason why not to. That's just, you're a born artist. That's who you are.
Yeah.
And you just can't stop, because people are always saying to me, man, I can't believe you're still doing it. It's so fantastic. I don't think it's that fantastic. I mean, it's who I am.
Yeah. What else am I going to do?
Yeah. That's just, I don't know life otherwise. And yeah, I mean, given the responsibilities that I have, it's very hard to make it happen. I mean, it's very difficult. And, you know, I have to, you know, put a lot of things in place in order to do it.
Yeah. You guys have to really...
We juggle.
Sacrifice, juggle, balance.
Yeah.
To do it. And you really do still sacrifice to make music.
Have to.
Regardless of the outcome.
Yeah, do it.
Can I tell you this one other thing before
Go? Tell me.
You haven't aged like... a minute.
You haven't either, so don't even...
No, I've got a lot of wrinkles.
I don't see a single wrinkle, so... But thank you.
Maybe the light's good where I'm sitting. Thank you. From now on, when I have girls over, I'm going to have them sit there.
Exactly.
Hey, let me interview you.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for coming over.
Thank
it's great
you
to catch
so much,
up with
Johnny.
You.
It's awesome to see you.
All right, and people can see you, amyashley.com. Find you on Facebook.
Yes.
And every... A-T-C-H-L-E-Y.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye. By the sun dip down and
fade it back up again. Yeah, man, it's awesome to get to reconnect with old friends. It was great to have Amy here. You know, she and her husband Elias are great people, great musicians, extremely talented. Can't say enough about them. If you don't know about her husband, you can go back a few episodes. I think it was Christmas Eve. Elias Haslinger, it's a great interview. He's also a great guy. They're both very calm. I like that. Makes me feel calm. Well, it makes me feel crazy, but it makes me get calm. Anyway, thank you, Amy, for coming by. Be sure you check out her music. Go see her play, Flipnautics, fourth Friday of every month, if you're in Austin. And if you're out there in the world, you know, look her up online. It's a lot of great stuff going on. And, you know the drill. You know, subscribe to us on iTunes. Like our Facebook page. You can follow me on Twitter, at Johnny Gowdy. Also Instagram, if you do that, at Johnny Gowdy as well. I guess, I hope you have a great day. Thank you again for listening. I love you guys. I do. Seriously. You make me feel better. Here's Amy Achley.